Welcome to part two of our conversation with Steve Ward about the wide world of the paranormal. Is there a connection between alien-like creatures? And that's such a generic term, I know, but things of that nature and spirits of the living, what we would consider ghosts, meaning is there anything there in any of your research or anything that you've looked at that points to, okay, once we're dead, because we obviously have many stories of, well, it seems to be my father's visiting me again because of very distinct traits and things that he did in life seem to be happening here when he's gone. Is there ever been anything where there seems to be a connection of like, okay, something to do with this craft or these beings or whatever, having a connection to deceased individuals that were, you know, on this planet as, you know, family members?
Yes.
Okay.
Rosemary Ellen Guiley told me once that she and one of her friends were in Waverly Hills Sanatorium. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the way they work it at Waverly Hills, you break off in groups and so forth. And they don't use any lighting or anything like that. You just let your eyes adjust. Well, they were in, I don't know what specific area they were in, but the person she was with said, Rosemary, do you see what I see? And they're looking deep into the dark, and she says, yeah, it looks like a gray. They saw what looked like a gray alien inside a haunted sanatorium. Mm. John Keel had gotten many reports of people of craft landing and so forth, and some of the people stepping off the craft looked like a deceased relative. So others people might say, well, the aliens, of course, can manipulate your mind to make you think you're seeing Uncle Harry or something like that. But again, yeah, so there, yes, there does seem to be a connection, and sometimes between it's just another one of those things where the lines between the what we think of as different areas of research kind of blur. So yeah.
It's an area that blurs so often. I mean, just, you know, growing up, I'm a child who grew up with the Unsolved Mysteries and Robert Stack and, you know, all of that. Yeah. And that was what, you know, kind of got me into just being obsessed with this stuff. And then ended up turning it into my career. When you have, almost, you know, you at least I grew up, you know, thinking of them as separate things. There's UFOs, there's ghosts. Two different baskets of stuff. And,
exactly.
And as I do this more and more and going on, you know, almost 8 years of doing this show and the thousands of people we've talked to, it's more of a gray area. And I'm not referring to it making a pun of grays in terms of the alien type being, but it's a gray area of, well, where do these things intersect? Because there's so many weird things that point to, there's some sort of a connection here that I don't think any of us really expected, or at least, you know, it wasn't the way that we were conditioned to believe it initially.
Keel was finding strange things like a lot of UFOs and even cryptids would be seen around cemeteries and things like gravel pits and so forth.
Yeah.
Just these bizarre, some patterns just don't seem to make any sense at all. So, yeah, they're just, like, again, once you go down this path, it's very hard to step back.
Yeah.
Both Rosemary and Stan Gordon told me that they would be talking to people that had already reported their cryptid or their UFO sighting. And they would sometimes report it to somebody that was just focused in one area. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear about your Bigfoot report. I want to hear about that strange craft you saw in the sky.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, a friend of mine, Brian Seach, who lives out in the Pittsburgh area, he was out with his wife and a group of people in a known Bigfoot area, where they had heard somebody had seen it and heard the Bigfoot calls and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And They didn't find Bigfoot that night, but they saw this strange meandering light. It was an anomalous light that was overhead, and then it would maneuver in strange ways and disappear, and then it reappeared. So not too bad of a trade-off, I don't think. You look for a Bigfoot and see a classic UFO, but it's just interesting that they were looking for one thing and got the other. You know, is there? And of course, Stan Gordon has these bizarre cases where they connect together, but. It's impossible for me now to look at these things and completely separate everything, you know.
Sure.
Once you're exposed to it.
I had an incident. I didn't personally see this, but it was around almost 20 years ago now to this day. And if you Google my name and the radio station I was at the time in Wisconsin, Wausau, Wisconsin, it was I'm actually Googling it as we speak. So this is about 20 years ago. I was doing a midday show on a top 40 radio station, and I got about 500 phone calls in one morning from folks saying that they had seen an unexplained light of some sort, almost orb-like, very, very low, kind of bluish green in color, moving in a very low fashion, fairly slow in the sky over, this is northern Wisconsin. It was one of the strangest days I've ever had on the air. I wasn't doing a paranormal show. I was, you know, playing Britney Spears and Backstreet Boys at the time. And so to get this, you know, this influx was very, very bizarre. It went all the way to, I could be wrong. I'm trying to think of who called me. It was someone who used to be a guest on Art's show years ago. I don't know. It might have been Whitley. I'm not sure. But somebody had called they got wind of all these reports that were going on, and then they wanted information from me. And they're just calling the request line. And I'm like, didn't I hear you on Art Bell the other night? They're like, oh, yes, that's me. I'm like, I thought so. but it was just a bizarre moment. But when we're talking about orbs, so many times, you know, orbs can be, especially when people are taking pictures, they can be explained away many a times as refractions of light. But I'm talking true. This is not through a picture. This is something you are seeing, or maybe you're capturing it on video and it clearly is not a refraction of light when it's legit. Where do you go on the world of orbs? I know, again, a very broad question, but is this something where maybe it is two separate things too? Maybe there are some sort of orb things in the world of something alien-like, and there's something orb-like that looks somewhat similar in the worlds of ghosts and spirits, or is it all the same damn thing and we just don't know what the hell we're looking at?
Well, you know what? There's a million ways I can answer this.
Yeah.
I came across the other day, Paul Devereaux is a researcher in Britain. He's written just dozens of books on Earth energies, Earth lights, and that sort of thing. In one of his books, he talks about proto-entities. And he gives several cases where people have seen, one guy saw a light, like an orb coming in from over the ocean, and it stops on the edge of the cliff there, and then morphs into a woman holding a child, and then she just walks off and then disappears. There's another case in Australia he talks about where several people are in a park or something like that, and they see this bluish orb form, and they look inside, and there's this small entity in there, and then it just takes off. And later on, one of them came back to the same spot and over several nights, and then finally saw this orb again and saw it. It was forming. When you look inside, you could see this darker bluish mist, and that formed together and became this entity. The entity was blurry at first, like a TV picture, and then it became clear. There are several, some UFO sightings are seen with, you know, the craft or the light or whatever is kind of inseparable from the entities. Let's see, there was another one I can't think of right now. But, there have been, even I think I heard this on Art Bell, a police officer called in, and he saw I've got a good one for you in a second. He saw what looked like a kind of a globe of light, an orb of light, and inside, curled up in it, was something like a Bigfoot-like creature. And it was sort of bouncing around and then went out of his view. Okay, remember Remember the good old days of Art Bell when Colm Kelleher and or George Knapp would come out, and then they would give you these tantalizing tidbits of what was going on the Skinwalker Ranch. This was before the book was published. Mm-hmm. That there was a classic case that is in the book where there's a couple observers that are on the ridge. They have a pair of night vision goggles, and they see this light, but when you see it through the night vision goggles, it looks like a tunnel, and there's something crawling out of it. I mean, it's using it's like a narrow tunnel, and it's using its elbows to get out. And it does get out, and it's kind of the shape and bulk of, say, a Bigfoot. But when the guy's looking at it, he sees it has no face and it's hairless. Well, I thought, and again, you know, I'm on the speculation train here, but when John Keel talks about these transmogrifications of energy, these things manifesting and, you know, becoming temporarily real, it's almost like this was a, you know, sort of crawling down the transmogrification birth canal and then becoming solid. And then if you remember the classic 1956 version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the seed pods that were copying people, when they first started to copy them, there was no detail. There was no detail in the face. It was later on, all the details filled in. So whatever this was, did it eventually form a face? Did it eventually grow hair? Mm-hmm. You know, I have no idea. But that's another instance where you've got what looks like an orb or a strange light. You know, we just lost Ted Phillips, another great UFO researcher. He was a colleague of Dr. Hynek's, and he investigated thousands of trace landing cases, situations where there was some kind of physical evidence left, whether the person had conjunctivitis or burn marks or radiation or trees burned or whatever. Well, he discovered this area that he dubbed Marley Woods in southeastern Missouri. And he was actually able to see, to observe phenomena. I mean, he'd been one of these guys like me that had never seen anything. Well, in this small area, they were experiencing all kinds of strange lights, and they even had some strange creatures and abduction experiences. But my long-winded point here is that Phillips said that the UFO phenomena has changed somewhat. You know, he used to get many, many more reports of the saucer shape or egg shaped metallic craft. And he said now so many of them have become more like orb, strange lights that will maneuver, they will separate, they will come back together. It's almost like, I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Trevor James Constable. He took those infrared photographs back in the 50s. In the Mojave Desert, and claimed that he, you know, captured like sky amoebas and that kind of thing. A whole fascinating area, but so you wonder, you know, if I do think that it's possible that there's some separateness in the sort of in quotes ghost orb and the more UFO or alien orb.
Yeah.
But who knows? You know? Maybe it's just all the same damn thing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's all, you know, opinion-based, and none of us know the sure answer to any of this. Otherwise, we won't be having this conversation.
But we're not merely dealing with the dust orb that you get in digital photography.
No, not at all. No, that exists, but it's certainly not all of it. There's certainly legitimacy to it. Let me ask you this, and this is, you know, kind of one of those questions that everybody kind of wonders about, but it's oftentimes just pulled down to kind of a micro level of wherever the individual asking the question is from. In the United States, we have, you know, Area 51, which we have the, you know, all of the conspiracies of do they have alien craft there, things of that nature. How much do you think governments, not just the U.S. government, but other governments, other countries, how informed, how much do you think some governments know, study, are aware of some of these things and have a better understanding than we do as the general public or private researchers of these topics? And it doesn't have to be limited to the United States. Do you think there's anybody out there that has a much greater understanding or knowledge or evidence of whether it be ghosts or even into the world of aliens and UFOs and such?
Yeah, probably. This is where I get very cynical. I'm pretty sure that I've always been pretty sure that disclosure is not going to happen, even though we keep getting these every once in a while. We get a little tidbit of, you know, somebody in officialdom saying, well, yeah, this is real and that might be real. I think that if they, regardless of how much they know, and they probably do know a lot more than they're letting on, they probably are in a situation by at the very least saying, well, we don't really know what the hell is going on, you know, and we're not going to admit that. And furthermore, if something is happening that they either know about or don't know about, the last thing they're going to do is say, yeah, there's some pretty weird stuff going on out there, and we have absolutely no control over it. They're never going to admit that. So, you know, I've when I was in my very strict Kiel period, I didn't believe there were any crash saucers. Perhaps I could be wrong. If there's one crash saucer, if there's just one, that puts it in the realm of the physical. I'm not sure that we can. It would be that easy to back engineer something, you know, and imagine if you're in the medieval times and even a World War One biplane crashes. Are they going to be able to back engineer and fly one? I don't think so. So I don't know. I think that they must be aware, more aware of what's going on in general, but they could be almost as clueless as we are.
Yeah. And that's what I wonder. I wonder if they are just as clueless. I mean, when we're asking, you know, depending on your country, you know, to implement just simple things that are very understandable, they have a great way of screwing it up. So,
you know, there's another interesting area of channeling and so forth.
Yeah.
That kind of brings it all together. There were, you know, George Hunt Williamson and George Van Tassel that allegedly were channeling the Space Brothers, you know,
mm-hmm.
And they would get, the thing is that when you get into channeling and then you come more toward recent times, there was the, I don't know if you're familiar with the Law of One books with Carla Rukart and Don Elkins. They were supposed to have been channeling Ra, you know, like Ra, the Egyptian Ra.
Okay.
A lot of the same names of the entities pop up from decades ago and for more recent times. Some of the same messages are the same. So that brings it into sort of the realm with some people of the supernatural. There's this pattern that I'm leading up to that's not. It doesn't go everywhere, but it's just very interesting. Years ago, I was watching a show on TV that caught my attention. There was a parapsychologist on, and I wish I knew who it was. But he was on the old Phil Donahue show, and he was talking about automatic writing. And he said that while he believed some of it was, in fact, you know, from people that had moved on from the dead, he said a lot of it is coming out of your own subconscious. And he said, you have to be careful because it goes through these stages. It, of course, it'll act like it's somebody else and not you. It'll start out being friendly and then intimate, and then it can get very nasty and obscene. And I thought, wow, I don't want to. And he even thought that was to be great therapy. You know, sometimes I thought, no, I don't need that kind of therapy where I'm, you know, something inside my head is being nasty, you know.
Sure.
But then I thought that triggered something because John Keel, in the Mothman Prophecies, he was in contact with several people that firmly believed they were in having contact with some other intelligence, some other entities. And they would go through the same pattern. They would, these entities would give them quests sometimes or things to do or to find. And their relationship would be friendly and then very intimate. And then sometimes they would actually get, you know, the Mothman prophecies. Well, there were several prophecies that these people would get, and some of them would come true. But then they would get the big one, you know, get everybody together on top of the hill because the Space Brothers are coming. And of course, nothing would happen. Or people would get these. One woman had this pointless quest she was put on to find some kind of a hidden crucifix in Brooklyn, New York, of all things. So I found it seemed like, and Keel called this false illumination. And a lot of people would be taken in by this. Whatever the source was, whatever was really going on, it would go through these stages where they would end up feeling kind of lost, abandoned, and really depressed. And then are you familiar with Alexandria David Neal. She wrote Magic and Mystery in Tibet, and she's the one that allegedly learned how to create a tulpa, you know, a thought form. She was spent time in Tibet. Supposedly, the Tibetans taught her how to do this. She created this image of a jolly little llama, that is a high llama, the person, and only she could see this thing when she created it, supposedly, and he was this happy little plump llama, and then after time, this thought form or whatever started to change. It became, actually started to look more evil. It lost weight. It started playing like pranks on her friends, sort of like a poltergeist. And then it got really nasty. And according to the book, she had to destroy it with her mind. Well, we can take that with a grain of salt. But here's the point. It seems that there is an aspect of this. Again, it gets into the trickster that starts out where, if we're not careful, you're kind of sucked into it with this the friendly overtones, the friendly gestures and communication, and then it becomes more and more intimate, and then you're left with nothing. So again, that brings us around to something, if true, something a bit out of the realm of the physical and something more in the realm of perhaps human consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so interesting how deep we can dig into this and then still be like, but who knows?
well, that's it. You know, I'm writing a book with a friend of mine, Joey Medea. Uh-huh. And it's called Patterns and Parallels, A New Paradigm for the Study of Paranormal Phenomena. And of course, we're making all kinds of connections. Another area that's fascinating is actually crop circles, which I used to ignore. And there's just so many. In one book, you know, you can't, there's only so much you can get in. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend like we're going to have all the answers either.
Let me ask you this in closing. It's an interesting, again, there's probably 50 different ways to answer this question, as there is with all of this. But in your opinion, are we seeing encounters with more specifically alien type things, crop circles, all of that? Is that sort of stuff decreasing, increasing, staying the same? I remember being a child, you know, in the 80s, and it seemed every other week on the cover of USA Today, there'd be like crop circle discovered in Iowa. And then it turned out there was somebody going around learning how to make really intricate designs in people's crops. But are we seeing an increase or decrease in that? And there's an interesting way of looking at that, too, in terms of just reporting. We are in a world now, when it comes to ghosts, at least, where it's become such an open conversation. We have TV networks that have almost dedicated all of their programming to ghosts. So it's an easier one to talk about. So just people talking about it could be at higher number as well. Or is activity increasing?
Excellent question, and I don't know, but I have a partial answer. Some years ago, there was a great publication called the UFO News Clipping Service. It came out of Arkansas, and what they would do is they gathered all the different newspaper clippings from all kinds of other sources regarding UFOs in Fortiana, and it would for like $5 a month, you would get this great, you know, you would spend hundreds of dollars to get it all yourself. And so the point is that people would say, well, you know, we don't see much in the way of UFOs anymore because, you know, the mainstream media only occasionally picks it up.
Yeah.
But when you would look at these clippings coming from local areas, it was going on all the time. So it may be an illusion. It may be that if we could gather all the information from all the locales across the globe, it's still as busy and maybe even increasing. But we can't. It's very difficult to tell because, like you say, the ghost thing is kind of on the forefront. But some of this other stuff, you'd have to dig through other local newspapers, perhaps, or other researchers around the world to find out.
That wraps up the second half of our conversation with Steve Ward about the wide world of the paranormal. You can check out Steve's podcast, The High Strangeness Factor, available through Paranormal UK Radio. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for the support.
Thank you.